You're all set.
Okay, good afternoon. It is May 17th. The time is 5:21 p.m. The session of the Independent Oversight Committee is now called to order. Given the agenda that was posted, do we have any member that has to disclose a conflict of interest? And if there is, the committee member needs to disclose why. Hearing no disclosure, we will proceed and we'll assume that there is no conflict of interest, that none of the members present have a conflict of interest as to any of the items on the agenda. There are, I believe, perhaps members of the public present. If so, this is the call to the public. It's the time for the public to comment. Members of the committee may not discuss items that are not specifically identified on the agenda, and comments are limited to 3 minutes per person. Is there a member of the public present who would like to address the committee? Does not appear there is, so we will proceed with...
Molly?
Yes.
Sorry, did Sabrina call in?
Sabrina did call in.
Okay, is this the place where she would make a brief statement?
Yes, if she's making a statement as a member of the public, certainly.
Sabrina, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. For those of you who haven't met me, I'm Sabrina Taylor. I'm a detective with the Phoenix Police Department, and I am the Crisis Intervention Team Training Coordinator, basically behavioral health liaison.
Yes, thank you. Sabrina, I'm so happy that you spoke up now. I was going to introduce you later, but this is perfect. Sabrina is a potential member of the IOC. And I am so excited because I think if there's any public policy development in the last maybe decade, that may be an overstatement, that has affected and has the potential to really affect the lives of those living with serious mental illness and their families, it's the CIT presence in PPD. And we're just grateful that you would give us this time, and we're grateful to Matt Moody for recruiting you. So I'm really excited about it, and I just think it brings an added dimension in to everything. I see the moms, particularly Rachel and Summer and Lori. Lori was smiling because we all know, we all talk about the program, and now we have a live human being that we can connect, and you shouldn't give out your phone number because everybody on here is going to start calling you. And Lori is the queen of calling and making things happen, and Rachel. But really, thank you. And Matthew, you get the gold star for recruiting. This is like recruiting Chris Paul to the Phoenix Suns or before he was injured. So thank you very much. With this, I think we'll now go. I don't have an update other than I was going to introduce, once again, I want to make sure everybody knows we have Rachel Strife, who's a mom and an accomplished advocate for the SMI, individuals with SMI. Summer Water, who is a mom and who has experience across the spectrum as the guardian for her brother, she has had responsibility for his entire adult life and probably was his substitute mother when he was younger. Joy is a longtime member. And then now we have, and Dr. Potts is here, Matthew's here, and now we have Sabrina as another potential member. Those who have attended the prior meetings, we will, and Liz, I forgot Liz because I'm not seeing her face. Liz Agbula is a CEO of a company that has is in the provider space and has a variety of services and brings incredible skill in the field. And we need a provider on the committee. We've lost our prior provider, so this is, it's really good to have a provider interested. So we'll get the applications are going out. If our new members, potential new members, fill them out and bring, we'll submit them before the next meeting. We can consider the applications. You will have attended then your third meeting and we can vote you in. Larry and I talked about this, and that's a great procedure. It's much simplified from the way it used to be. And Sabrina, yours will be, then this is your first meeting, two more, and we'll do the same process. And I'll get the application to you at the same time. So let's go next, if we can, to the update from our community partners. If anybody has an update, please raise your hand or speak up and let's go through it. Any updates?
Hi, Holly, this is Dawn McReynolds from United Healthcare. Are you referring to the health plans? Or?
Yes, the health plans.
Okay, I apologize. I wasn't
No, that's all right. I probably wasn't as clear as I should have been. Thank you. Yes, if do you have...
I do not have an update, Holly, okay. But thank you.
Sure. Anybody, any of the other health plans present who have an update?
No update from Mercy Care.
Okay. Banner, is Banner on?
No update from Molina.
Okay, Molina. Okay, great. It sounds like if anybody needs anything, please tell us you have an update and we will we'll come back to it. Dr. Potts had asked to be put up at the beginning of the agenda. He had some items that he wanted to discuss, and so we will call those items. Dr. Potts, if you'd like to do that now, that way we have plenty of time for you to have discussed the items you wanted to bring to the committee's attention, and then also if there's anything else, we can move on.
Thanks, I appreciate it. I have to leave early. That's why I asked to be moved. I think we'll have enough time. I sent all the members and Dorothy and Lori. I don't think you got it, but Dorothy got it. My concerns regarding behavioral health residential facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it with some attachments, which I thought would be helpful. I've been at a couple different residential facilities recently, where I was told, and also family members told me, that they are not allowed to see on a 24-hour birth, that they are not allowed to have their loved one be with them for more than 4 hours a week off site of the birth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that and confirmed that with a couple birth owners, that they were present at a Zoom call, I think probably January, with Aetna and the head of adult services for Mercy Care, that they were told the clients could not do overnight stays or could not be again more than 4 hours offsite per week, not per day. Unless it was specifically in the individualized treatment plan, and that treatment plan was not only approved by the clinic but by Mercy Care directly, is what I was told. Well, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but I would raise some concern.
Mm-hmm.
I also sent out a list of a couple hundred programs that, as of 2 days ago, were suspended or terminated by access because of potential fraud that the FBI is investigating that was on the access site. And I think it's partly related to these potential policy changes, because what I understand maybe is that 24-hour berths are paid, obviously, to do training and education, rehabilitative or rehabilitative services, and that if someone's off-site, they're maybe still billing for the time the person is off-site. And so there's some real issues here. But I think the concern I have is for the human rights of the people who are essentially, and I've seen this too many times, and we've all seen it, Joy has seen it, Kathy has, where people are told they cannot leave the berth for the first 30 days. They can't step outside the berth for the first 30 days unless it's with possibly staff. So I think that was one of my major concerns, that if this is accurate, we need to see some way of making it a little easier for families to visit their loved ones or take them out to dinner, because some of them have to drive 30 miles or more. And they were telling me this issue. And so I'd like to investigate that. Consistent with that is, I think, as I said, the message I sent to the committee, the berths are responsible for doing a lot of rehabilitative care, which clearly isn't being done. You know, no one I've talked to says that the house managers, and I, you know, this is just random chance, but have taken them on the public bus system to show them how to get tickets and how to use the public health, the public bus or public transportation system, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a different collateral issue regarding the behavioral health residential facilities. And I think as part of this new policy or procedure change may very well affect Northern Arizona and Southern Arizona as well. And I'd remind Dot and others that you are standing members of our of this committee, so you can speak anytime and any questions you have. But anyway, does anyone have questions on that? Was it is my concern?
Lori has raised her hand. Lori, you are knowledgeable in this area, certainly. Do you have comments?
Yes, we have talked to Mercy Care, and I think what happened, it was misconstrued and misunderstood, and it's nuanced. So the rule is, Mercy Care came to our ACME meeting and said that it is treatment, right? So it, you are providing treatment during the day, so you can't interfere with programming and treatment. But families, if they're not toxic or harmful, and that happens sometimes, obviously if a BERF knows that a family member is going to have them drink or do drugs or whatever, they have every right to say, we're not going to let them leave with that person. But in general, it's encouraged. When our son has been in many berths where, you know, after hours of programming, we take them to dinner, or take them to the mall, or go to a movie on the weekends too. What you cannot do is ask to go on vacation or have overnights, because then the thinking is, if they're well enough to go for a vacation, then they probably don't need this level of care, which is reasonable. So they're not trying to be unreasonable with the policy, but those that have interpreted it that you cannot see your family, that is not what Mercy Care said. And they came on our call and really spelled out and said they were going to get with the providers that were not allowing family members to visit on weekends, after hours, taking them to dinner.
The one issue of that is that, in fact, a couple owners of multiple berths within the last week told me that they've interpreted and believe that the four-hour limit is a four-hour maximal limit they have. So, no, I believe you, and it doesn't make sense. But the bottom line there is that tells me Mercy Care has not done a good job of letting them know that they won't be. Yeah, and I asked the BERF person to provide me, if they could, with some writing policy and stuff. I couldn't find any. And I asked Ms. Fitzgerald, I think it was, who's head of, I think it's Elizabeth, I forget her name, who's head of adult services.
Blythe Fitzgerald.
No, Elizabeth something, but anyway, I asked her to, it's in my memo, I just sent you to Lori, to give me some thoughts on it. But so maybe we ought to clarify that and see what they're doing, because it's, this is clearly impacting. I saw a family impacted on it a week ago, who said that's what the restriction was.
Matthew, you have a comment.
Yeah, I have a couple, but, you know, firstly, the stuff that's happening with the, you know, the group homes getting shut down because of, and I'm sorry, I'm using the correct language, I call them group homes, but residentials, whatever they are, getting shut down. It's really upset me personally to see what's happening here. And I think that that just kind of reinforces how important the IOCs are and visits are. So I just wanted to say that, like, I think it's important, but I think that everything you said, Jack, is completely valid. And I think what we have to, what I'd like to do is make a motion that Mercy Care and or Access, whoever licenses homes for SMI individuals, provide what type of training or guidance they give or restrictions or documentation they give to these group homes, or you guys can call them BERFs. I don't know what that means. Behavioral something. Anyway, I'd like to request that they give that to us and tell us how they are reviewing that information, how they are, licensing these agencies. Like, I want them to explain the whole thing so that, you know, why do some of these homes that Jack is talking to have this incorrect understanding, which is negatively impacting people's recovery?
One thing, Matthew, though, too, that what's gone on in the news has been intensive outpatient treatment, which is in sober homes and not BERFs. So it's getting confused and conflated. Sure. So those are kind of separate issues. But
you're
as
correct.
Far as I think Mercy has to do a better job communicating with the providers. It is nuanced by saying you must provide treatment. They can't go overnight and go on vacations because some families have asked for that. But it is the intention that they integrate in the community and they see their families that are healthy when it's outside.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that these residentials are doing improper things. I'm just saying that we are the oversight system for these things. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen happen, which was someone taking advantage of the American Indian Health Plan and sneaking in crap that way, I would like us as the IOC to review that stuff and have a presentation given to us on how these places are licensed, what Mercy Care or whatever agency oversees them is doing to make sure that they stay in compliance. And what Jack just said, like, they should be taking these people out and showing them how to use the bus or, you know, whatever living skills they need to get closer to independence, they should be doing that. So what are the requirements that are put upon these places to do that?
I think I'm hearing a couple of things. So I think we're talking about BERF's compliance with members being able to visit with family, how long they can be absent from a BERF, and that aspect of Jack's communication, I think. And so I'm going to agendize that for a more full discussion next meeting. And I think we should focus on that and have in mind a specific language for a motion as to what we as an IOC want to do, as well as our communication with Access and Mercy to clarify exactly in a non-nuanced way. I love that phrase, Laurie. It needs to be as clear as a fire exit sign as to who, you know, the conditions under which you leave and come back and how long and in whose company. And certainly that if you leave and come back, you can be searched for obvious reasons and your property can be searched. So,
Holly, I just want to say a couple things if you guys don't mind.
Yes, and then Liz, I'm sorry.
Sorry, members of the public are not allowed to address the committee unless they're on the committee. Just a point of rule. Unless they're called to the public, but let me just suggest there was a potential motion, and I would like to make a motion consistent with what Matthew was saying.
Well,
and it was noted. Am I allowed to offer a motion? Is that proper?
No, there's a motion, and now we're having discussion.
I'm sorry, we didn't have a second on that motion.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry, you are correct. Are you seconding the motion?
I would like to, in lieu of that, I'd like to offer a friendly amendment to Matthew that makes it more specific. And it's in the memo. I said that we specifically ask Elizabeth Forsyth or Etna and Chris, Kristen Morgan, were apparently the people on the talk. We asked them for a copy of the Zoom call that they provided to the providers. And we asked for policies and procedures regarding people time away from the birth, et cetera. So we'll have that before our next meeting.
Great.
And that's very specific to times allowed off from a 24-hour birth, et cetera, and how the individualized plan can be adjusted individually for people who may want to spend overnight or want to maybe spend 6 hours, three times a week with their family having dinner. So that would be my motion.
Okay. Matthew, would you accept that amendment?
I think those details are important, but I actually want a bigger picture here. I want to know the rules that they provide these places. So yeah, everything Jack said, but on top of it, I want to know how often the REBA or the SMI system is checking in on these homes, not AZ Department of Health Services. I want to know how often they're making sure that their members are getting things needed. Are they auditing these places? Are they visiting these places? Those sorts of things.
I think I would agree, and that's fine. I think that's a secondary question that comes down to what I sent out also about what the required, because they're not doing oversight, but I agree with you. I would agree with that. So I would second your motion with that amendment.
Okay.
All right. So let me restate this motion to be sure it's I have the pieces. Matthew has moved. Jack has amended. Matthew clarified. Jack seconded. That the IOC request from Access and Mercy Care a copy of the Zoom call with Access and members and Aetna. Mercy was on as well, I guess, as well as clarification of the rules that are in effect as to absence from a birth during treatment. And third, an explanation and documentation regarding auditing of the services that births are providing and what efforts are made to audit, proactively audit and determine compliance with what is required under the law and the Mercy guidelines. Is that a fair restatement?
It sounds like an attorney wrote that. Yes, it sounds great.
That sounds great to me.
Well, it's after five. I stopped being an attorney at five. But because I can't bill after five, right? That would be double billing. No. With that, we've rephrased the motion. We have a motion, a second. We've had discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Appears to pass unanimously. Okay, we will then move on the agenda.
If I may, to finish the birth issue, I did send to the members what they are supposed to be doing, what is required. So I think that's something we can look at for site visits and the like.
Awesome. Thank you.
And a concern that Matt suggested is that list of 100 people, agencies, that providers that are suspended right now, I am wondering how many of those have patients in them, how many are births, and how many of those patients are now going to be jettisoned from them. It's a very big concern I have. So I don't know if it's going to happen or not. Maybe Laurie knows, but I sent that list out to everyone, and mm-hmm. It's a lot of places, and what's happening to our patients.
I looked at it quickly.
Can we request that? Can we request
but
that?
That would be second. I think it's a second motion, but that, Laurie, you mentioned something about that. But I'm wondering, is that a concern?
My concern hearing all this, and a lot of them aren't births, it's intensive outpatient treatment. Some have housing, but the main problem was of not providing intensive outpatient treatment or saying they are and sending them somewhere else to get it and then double booking and all this other kind of crap. I think that from Holly, this has been going on a long time. This isn't something new. But it would be interesting to see what their plan is if now they say they're on suspension. What about the members? Where are they going? That's always a concern. The second concern is when someone acts bad in this area, there's kind of a overflow cast on other providers that are doing a good job. Is it going to make it harder for providers and births that are doing the work and are doing the services, harder to collect the money? It just messes everything up for the providers that are doing a good job. So it's a concern.
I think it might be, I think those are all, it seems all valid concerns. And something that we would maybe want to look into, maybe we could, I think there was this big press conference and there were people, 100 or so providers just recently suspended. But there are other cases that go back to 2019, which are all on the Access web page. So it might be wise to wait and see what comes out of the investigation and what becomes more publicly available. I suspect that Access, Mercy, Access in particular, they're not going to really comment on an ongoing investigation. But so I wonder if maybe we wait and see and try to, we have the list, we can determine who were births and who were not. That's a fairly easy thing to do. And then we can revisit this when we have more information that's available.
Well, I wonder, 2019, that's 4 years ago. I agree with Matt. Why don't we simply ask how many are births and what are they going to do with the clients in the IOP? And that's all right.
So is that the motion that I hear? The motion is to ask Access how many of the providers on the list on their website are births, and what has been done to reassign those members.
Yeah, and I approve that motion. Is what I'm saying. I want to ask though: can we just get someone that is knowledgeable on this topic to come to the next meeting and talk about this?
What topic?
The suspension.
How providers get suspended.
And what's happening.
Yeah, I think the question is when a provider is suspended, what happens to the members? That's the human rights concern, I think. When a birth is suspended, what happens to the members?
Correct.
Okay.
I second that motion, Matthew.
All right. So the motion is that we ask Access two questions. One, of these, I guess it's one question, which is when a birth is suspended from participation and Access, what happens to the members and how is their care met by Access? And so that's the motion that I hear.
I also asked them to identify which on that list are births, because we may be able to check up on our own. So which on the list are births?
All right.
And secondly, what you just said, is that correct, Matthew?
Yep, I agree.
Okay.
Which are unlicensed sober living? Because I'm looking at the list here and there's a lot of unlicensed sober living, and there's some that are terminated. So some of them I recognize. So the terminated ones, the people are likely gone.
We're just looking at births. Yeah. We're not looking at unlicensed. Okay. We're looking at births only. That was
the
motion.
The motion is that we ask Access to produce a list of the from that list the members that the entities that are births, and to provide for us information as to how, when that provider was suspended, the members were relocated for continuation of care.
Confirmed.
Okay. We've had the motion. We've discussed the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It appears the motion passes. Thank you, Dr. Potts, for those issues. I believe, Dr. Potts, you had site visits last Friday. Would you like to give a report on that?
Hey, excuse me, Holly. It's Dorothy. Before you move on, might I just ask a question about that?
Sure.
Okay. Looking at the list, Jack, that you're discussing, and this will sound stupid, but I learned so much from your group. I have to ask you, is it possible, are any of those also in the Northern Arizona area? I mean, I don't recognize any of the names, but would I go by that number following the name? I'm sorry?
They are statewide, to my knowledge. I think they're mostly concentrated in the central Arizona region, but I believe there are statewide homes.
They could be. Okay, perfect. Okay. And just very briefly, my daughter, before she went into ASH, spent a short time in a birth down in Peoria. And the two takeaways from that experience were the owner of the house kept saying she has to have her head on the pillow. So, I mean, there was no, you know, we would love to have had her home for a weekend or something like that. But that, and again, this is 5 years ago, but that seemed to be the phrase that this woman used. My daughter's head had to be on the pillow. And I don't believe there was any restriction on time, but they just appreciated my saying, okay, we'll be home by 8 o'clock or something like that, you know.
I think they had to be in bed to count for the daily census, from what I
exactly
when we would take them out for paid dinner.
Yeah.
Well, I think, as I recall from access meetings, access participation in the in ACME's meetings, if the patient is not at the birth overnight, the birth cannot bill.
Right, right.
And so it's an empty bed. It is a policy, a reimbursement policy, no doubt by Aetna, to make sure that people aren't claiming people are residents and they're not. They're uh-huh. just there 3 days a month or something. But it's a good example, I think, of reimbursement policy that is counter to family, to recovery, to family. And I remember questioning it. And I also remember from a personal perspective when a family member was hospitalized and in treatment at a premier place, we had no contact for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. And then it was gradually reintroduced under very strict circumstances. And it's an N of one in terms of sample size, but boy, I can't argue with the outcome. But it's totally anecdotal. But I think this is a good example of billing policy. I think also I have a concern, knowing some of the families that I work with and some of the clients that I have, the last thing I want to see are these families showing up and wanting to spend all day there, wanting to take the patient, you know, their loved one out for McDonald's in the middle of the day. And then, oh, I got to run by the dry cleaners and oops, the dog is supposed to have its bath. And oh my goodness, look, my gas is low. I got to stop. Hey, there's this great Mexican restaurant next door. Let's just go get an early dinner. And the patient's been gone 5 hours. Dr. Olson has often said something that I think is important to remember, and that is that not all families are healthy. And so I just think we need clarity. And I loved the language that Laurie said. It's nuanced, and that's where all the confusion comes from. So I think these questions that we are going to ask can really help clarify that. And then, Dot, I think in terms of a follow-up response, we have a great opportunity for the IOCs to play a role statewide in clarifying these rules.
We'd love to participate in your next meeting and hear what you learn. And in the meantime, we'll take a look at that list, and it's very concerning. So, yeah. And I'll mute myself again. I don't want to hold up your meeting, but very much appreciate the support.
will immediately share with you, as an ad hoc member of the committee, we will share whatever information we get with all the IOCs and with ASH, because many of the ASH patients will leave and go, some will leave and go into a birth. So it's, I think this is a great statewide effort, and we could use a lot more of it statewide with our IOCs. We don't have a legislative update. Josh isn't here. Site visit reports. Joy Green, can you give a report on the site visits from last week?
Yes, I can. The first place that we went, I don't have the address in front of me. Dr. Potts did try to get someone there and nobody answered. And then the follow-up visit, I think Dr. Potts is more qualified to give you the results of that one.
Is Dr. Potts still on or did he hop off?
No, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my video died, which is better. Two things. We did go to Emmanuel Campus of Care, which is 99th Avenue Peoria. It's a SNF, but it has probably a couple hundred beds. They have three secure behavioral health units there. Josh was very pleased that there are some secure unit options available besides level one facilities. I personally have been there a number of times, and I'm glad they let us in. It was relatively clean. I think it was a little outdated, an old motel that had been converted. Times I've been there before, frankly, I wouldn't. Some of the chaos was such that it was very disturbing. And I've worked at a 3,000 bed state hospital previously, and it was more disturbing than that hospital was.
It's there smaller, were people that, right?
This one's a lot smaller, but it was also more chaotic and very dysfunctional. One for the cuckoo's nest portion. They were very receiving of us. We met with the team at the Emmanuel Campus of Care. It is a place where the public fiduciary often puts their wards. It is a place where people on court order treatment often go, even though it's a more restrictive setting, I believe, than they need. And that's very clear. My concerns were twofold, primarily. One is lack of real adequate programming. Again, it's more of a fiction. Number two, they don't do any IADs. And they have dozens of SMI patients there at any one time, dozens. And they say they've never done an IAD. So that was a level of concern, because they have deaths there. They have people being restrained, being transported. And they have three secure behavioral units, which is a lot. So
it's a licensed nursing home, right?
Yeah, it's SNF. And so, okay. So my question would be, and I think we need to inquire, and I would like to, and I'm wondering if Joy would agree, but I'm like, and Kathy was there with us. So it was a very good that we all met. We had agreed that we're going to meet on those Fridays, the first Friday, and Josh came out too. So Joy, was that not disconcerting to you too?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Well, I just felt, you know, you saw the patients that were there were just sitting around and not active enough, not doing something, like you said, with the programs.
And realistically, there's a patio outside that they don't even let people go out. You know, I mean, so it's really an interesting mix there. My question would be, can we make a formal request of Access or Mercy Care as to why this place is not doing IADs and are SNFs exempt from doing IADs on SMI patients?
Well, the licensure of any healthcare facility requires, in effect, a tracking mechanism for incidents, accidents, and deaths. That's in the licensure. I think we're going to have to ask the Department of Health Services that.
The SMI is, we can ask Access, they can go there, but it isn't We're under
all tax. If it's a nursing home, it's going to be all tax. And it's going to be all tax and DHS. It's not going to be access.
Okay. Some of these patients are not under all tax. They're there briefly. Just some of them have been just released out of Valleywise. But my point is, wouldn't it, however you want to do it, but I think we only have the authority to ask and demand an answer from Access and Mercy Care about the SMIs.
Correct.
So I would move that we formally request an answer to whether or not Emmanuel Campus of Care is exempt and also are SNFs exempt, and if not, why haven't, are they providing them and why aren't we seeing them? Because I searched the database for IADs from there and didn't see any when there were dozens of patients there. Joy, do you want to?
Right. So that's the motion. Joy seconds. Any more discussion? So there being none, just to restate the motion, Dr. Ponce, you're asking that we request from Access an explanation specific to Emmanuel Campus of Care as to why they are not submitting IADs on SMI individuals who have been committed there by their guardian.
Who are residing
there. Okay.
Is that right? That was your understanding. They said they did not do that, correct? I want to make sure that.
Laurie has her hand up. Laurie, continued discussion.
I was just wondering, I mean, just because they're in a different facility, wherever they are, they still have their SMI rights, right? So they still are held to the same standard. So it seems like they would have to do it. They may want to do it, but they
very good point.
Absolutely. And that was a concern that was right in our face when we visited.
Absolutely. Ashley Mason, who's a veterans advocate at Mercy Care, asked, are we going to send the motions in the, will they be in the minutes? Yes, they will be. And those minutes, of course, are all online now. And Google Translate or Google, it's not Google Translate. We're not translating them into Ukrainian, but we get a written transcript. So yes, they will be there, and we will keep track in a separate document of the motions and that are made each time, so we can follow up on them and track them. So thank you for clarifying, asking that question, Ashley. That's a good clarification. And true to form for a master's in social work, focusing on process and tracking things. So thank you for lending your expertise in that area to this group.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know it's very helpful. Gosh, social workers are the best at process. So the motion having been clarified, all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Hi.
It appears unanimous passing. Okay. Thank you very much.
Anything else, Joy, that you saw that you want to mention about the manual?
I'm sorry. I can't recollect what you're referring to, Dr. Potts.
I'm sorry. Anything else about the site visit?
Oh, no. I think you mentioned it good. I really do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Giesel.
I believe we have proceeded now through public comment first. I took that out of order, which is unfortunate. Let me ask, Larry has joined. Is there any update regarding the Department of Administration and Access interaction?
Hello, Holly.
Hi.
Good evening. Sorry I'm late. I had another meeting, another IOC meeting, so I'm having to juggle a little bit. But one update I have for the group is that we have an open meeting law training scheduled for June 7th at 10 a.m. So So anybody on the call that's welcome to or welcome to attend, if you need a link for that meeting and training, I'd be happy to send it to you. So please let me know if you don't have it. And we will get that out to the group.
Great. Would you send me the link and I'll make sure that everybody has it. And just for all the new members, this is potential new members. This is a required training. And it's very helpful, I think, just in general as to how meetings can be run. It's a very, very helpful training. And it is well done, well done. Dr. Potts, you have your hand up.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think it's more than appropriate. If you want to have more public comments, doesn't mean you can't re-raise the issue a couple times on the agenda. So if you're just a thought, I'd love to hear from the public.
I agree. I was working down through the items that we have covered. And I also want to give an opportunity to Laurie. And I don't know if Dot is still on, but Laurie, do you have an update from Ash?
Our meeting's tomorrow, but they were, I think, pretty confident that they've hired a new CMO. We'll probably hear it tomorrow night. I'm really thrilled to get a new CMO. That's what I'll say.
You can take the fifth on any further. Yes. I hope, fingers crossed, that they hire a psychiatrist with formal forensic training. That would be, I think, extremely important at Ash. Okay, we're down to number 13, public comments. We are going to reopen that. Is there any other member of the public, potential member, who wants to comment or ask questions? I think that Liz had her hand up earlier during that portion. She may not. There's Liz. Hi, Liz. Hey. Thanks for popping back on.
No, for sure. So I just wanted to respond regarding the outings and things. You know, that's we operate PHRF, so we certainly understand that concern from family members. But what we've seen lately is we have family members that actually take their members from the facility and take them to a group at their clinic. Now, that group is being billed by the clinic, but we're also providing behavioral health services. And as we know, that's fraud. So that's a concern that we've always had. Another concern that we've seen lately is, just like you're saying, you know, they're leaving for 6, 7, 8 hours. Like, okay, now that doesn't seem like something we can bill for. So now we have to reach out to Mercy Care and even AZ Complete, and they have very separate rules. It doesn't seem like they're access linear rules. These seem like rules that are delineated based on the county. And yes. Then the third issue is we have members that are all techs. So we have SMI members that are receiving all tech services because they are long-term. They cannot leave our facility without staff accompanying them. So that also poses a different issue for a different set of members all under the same roof. And so obviously a lot of agencies are running under, you know, 3, 4, and 5, especially those that are even CARB certified, very different rules based on the member. And one of the things that I've spoken with Holly in the past is, you know, we do have members that leave the facility on their own and they come back. If they come back with any contraband, we are cited for putting their lives in danger. We write an IAD and we say somebody came back with, you know, whatever it is. I think someone at one of our facilities came back with, she came back with a little bottle of alcohol. And we confiscated it. We wrote the IED, you know, all of those things, because she tried to give it to another member. So obviously that's what caused the IED. We were cited for putting the member's life in danger because we should not have allowed that member to leave the facility independently because they are in treatment.
I think that's a really important issue because the member has an absolute right to leave. This is voluntary. It's their voice. It's their choice. And they can leave. Now, and for you, if they leave and they get into mischief, they misbehave, when they come back, are you supposed to kick them out and render them homeless?
No, because then we'll get a grievance for that.
Exactly. So I really think it seems like this issue of how do we balance the rights of individuals living with SMI with the responsibilities of the birth under the guidelines and the issues that you just described. I bet, and I want to hear from Rachel, I bet this has not been examined closely. And so I think there's a big contribution there. I don't know, Laurie may have things to add there.
But I just want to say though that the deficiency came from licensing. We explained the issue to Mercy Care and to Arizona Complete, and they obviously were very much in opposition to the deficiency that we received. And so how do we balance what licensing requires versus what the insurer also requires? It is not, it's not linear information at all.
No, we, and that's a good, that is an excellent point for us to take up and consider as we look at these issues of about the clarifying the policies. And Rachel, you had your hand up.
Yeah, so I had a person I advocate for that was at Emmanuel Campus of Care that you were talking about earlier. And indeed, there was almost no programming. Everyone was sitting around doing nothing. In one respect, it was, they were being kept safe. This girl was DTS, DTO, had been at Valleywise on COT, needed a place to discharge to that would keep her safe, but nothing was happening. I mean, and the mom was like, I'm getting ready to drop off coloring crayons or anything. So a couple things. The heavily restricted first 30 days, as a parent, I love it. These people are coming out of the hospital to the next level of care. It's, you know, the first thing they want to do is come home and get me out of here. You know, having that structure, I like. But the second thing is births aren't being compensated enough. The reimbursement for what services we're expecting them to provide from Mercy Care is woefully inadequate, right? They're trying to it's the same level of care as some of these Altex patients, and they're getting quite a bit less, correct, Liz? And so if you're gonna provide programming, I mean, my son was in a private program with amazing programming. The cost just to like run the place is $900 a day. And if you're going to be doing groups and have facilitators and have counseling and have all these things, there is no way that that is happening on whatever Mercy Care is reimbursing with. I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. And my son's private insurance and private employer insurance paid for my son to be at effectively a great PHP program for a year. I know that Access will never do that, but come on, it's woefully inadequate for what these kids need.
If I may on two things. Number one, the problem is on the majority of programs we have visited, they actually don't deserve any money because they're not providing any services. So that's the problem. There are some good ones out there. And that's an issue that I don't think Access, as Matt pointed out earlier, is doing sufficiently. They're not going in and looking at what programs are being done. And number two, I want to beg to differ with Liz and say that our goal is to look at individualized treatment plans. And frankly, if someone doesn't need 30 days locked up, it should be individualized very clearly in their plan and said, hey, it is a human rights violation to treat everyone the same way. So that's, and so that's what I take as a physician, that should be individualized treatment plans. The third thing is the AMPM, I'll give you the site right now, page 5 of 12. Let me see if I can find the bloody thing. Hang on, I'm gonna read it to you. More than under chapter 300, section 310, covered services regarding rehabilitation services, more than one provider agency may bill for skills training and development services provided to a member at the same time if indicated by the member's clinical needs as identified in the service plan. So the fiction that you can't have two agencies billing is a fiction, because that's, I just read the AMPM, I gave you a site. I don't know what they're saying, but that's something to refer to, and that's what the law says. So, you know, I think what we're doing is we're not saying, hey, this person does need to go off site and get some of this training that the BRF cannot do, because from going 24/7 lockdown, essentially, then to the next step is a big jump. We need to transition in a very measured, individualized way. So that's what I think I, as a site reviewer, am going to be looking more and more at programs and what fiction it is and how to individualize. Because if any of you have looked at many independent treatment plans, they're boilerplates. For example, they shall have individual psychotherapy, quote, between one time per week and one time per month. That's not individualized, but that's in almost every plan. Right. Anyway.
And thank you. I think what Liz is saying is consistent with what the AMPM says, which is that if you have that as an approved individualized treatment plan and Mercy and everybody agrees, if the REBA and everybody agrees, then you may be able to, but you've got to get that agreement to bill by code. And you can't, if you don't. Yeah, but that is and as I understood what Liz was saying, these are people taking their kids out and taking them to the clinic on their own and not telling the birth.
Well, no, I agree. No, it's got to be in the plans, but that's where they need the groups, and everyone needs to be on the plan to look at these plans individually. That's all.
Great.
Yeah, no, agree.
And Lori has her hand up.
Just quickly, we've been to lots of births. There are good ones and bad ones. Some of the early ones, there was like, they cannot leave, but remember, they're not secure. My son left so many of them so often. And usually if you left, it used to be LifeWell, not LifeWell. I can't remember, they've changed names so many times over the years, that if you left, you couldn't come back. Then you could come back once or twice. But some of the other ones, and we have families that have this all the time, if they go out and they use, the rule is they come back and they're dirty, or they can tell that they're high. If they are, they send them to Community Bridges and they detox overnight and then come back. But there's differences between community living, births, and the rest of them. But I've seen the whole spectrum. I absolutely agree that you cannot on your own go ahead and decide you want to enroll your loved one in a different treatment when they're theoretically in a program. That's just nuts. But the rules are for general. They're not for specific rule breakers. I mean, you have to handle them on an individual case.
So it's interesting, and we will definitely want to take this up in future discussions. If the patient comes back, they're high, they send them to Community Bridges, and all that means that the BRF can't bill for them.
That's right.
So they're punished for doing the right thing. And
they have a
bed that isn't filled. Their overhead doesn't go down because the person isn't there. I mean, it's not much charge for breathing air.
That's why we need secure BRFs for those that really have not gotten the insight and will not stay wherever you put them, and they still want to use and they don't want to take the meds.
And so I think, and then the alternative is the BRF says they can't stay here, so they kick them out. And then where do they go? Are they going to go to a sober living or where, you know, where? I think this issue of how we pay for BRFs and how we balance the rights of patients versus making sure that the services are provided, I think that's such an important area for this group. We've been talking about an agenda item, just for the record, which was the BRF issue that Dr. Potts raised, because we're doing it in public session. And when we are in the call to the public, we cannot discuss items that are not specifically identified on the agenda. So we've done this discussion because I believe it fell well within the description of Dr. Potts' agenda item, BRFs. But just going forward, we always have to do that. And you'll learn that in the public open meeting law seminar on June 7th. And so I think we are at the end of the agenda, Jack, Joy. Laurie, any other items that we should discuss under new business?
I don't have any, Laurie. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, all the health plans for attending. Laurie and Dot, I think you're thereof. Thank you so much. I think having the members here, members of other committees as ad hoc, the chair of the other committees as ad hoc members of this committee, is invaluable. And it really is probably the best link with that continuum of care for this population that we have. So I'm really excited. This is a great meeting. Thanks, everybody. And we look forward to next month when we'll be voting on the applications for Rachel, Summer, and Liz, and then two meetings later for Sabrina. And in fact, I'm going to call you, Sabrina, and ask that you maybe do an overview for us on the CIT program. If you can't get it, I mean, I'm sure you can do it in your sleep, but I think that would be really helpful next month. And we can get lots of people, I know, will be interested in hearing that. I know ACME would do it. And it's something, Laurie is vice chair of ACME. It's something that I think ACME would love probably to have you do a stakeholder meeting on, and we'll make sure we get it out. Everybody hears about CIT, but they've never seen, I'll use a gender specific term, the queen of CIT. So it's just really exciting, and I will follow up with you and look forward. If you could think about maybe doing that, we could take 15, 20 minutes and at the beginning of the meeting, so others who may want to join can join.
Okay, sounds great.
All right. I believe we are done, and I want to make sure I have the script right. So I'm asking for a motion for adjournment of the IOC.
I motion.
I second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
We are done. Thank you all, and we'll see you next month, and expect a lot of information in the meantime. Bye.
Thank you, Holly.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.